All right. We spoke about people who are, you know, hunkered down during this pandemic and how it's affecting their work. Well, this was an interesting one. Our good friend, Dr. Stephen Cook, Canadian research professor at environmental science and biology at the Cook Lab at Carleton University, reached out to him to see how this is affecting him. And, well, let's find out. Joining us now is Dr. Cook. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How are you today?
Good. You're surviving it, are you?
We are. But it's certainly not an easy time.
I was absolutely... When Sarah told me that she had talked to you and what you were doing to get through this thing, I thought, wow, what a great idea. You got your kids working for you, so you got free labor going on, first of all. That's the important part. I keyed in on that part right away. Secondly, what a great distraction. You don't even have to do anything. Get them out in the water fishing. It's fantastic. Tell folks about it.
Yeah, so our lab is shut down. I've got 40 students, postdocs, staff members on our team. Everybody's working from home. Normally, we would have people in wetsuits. We would have boats spread across the countryside collecting data, interacting with fish and with anglers, and none of that's happening. So I've been fortunate in that I've been self-isolating with my family. I have three young boys, ages 5, 7, and 10, and they have been my field assistants. We've been able to do a little bit of work on the water, get them out there, helping me do some work with nesting bass. We're continuing with our fish tagging. So trying to make the best of a bad situation.
No kidding. Any stories you can share that were eye-openers for you working with the kids?
Well, I've got the privilege of having a 7-millimeter wetsuit. Their 3-millimeter wetsuits aren't quite as effective at keeping them warm without looking at bass. So limited attention span, and there's definitely the odd tear here and there. But I think it's really good for them to see what we do and get them excited about the outdoors. And it's a perfect way to talk about science. They get to understand how these animals reproduce and why we have some of the rules we do about fishing as well. So I've talked and shown videos to my boys before about bass reproduction and parental care, but it's not until you really see it underwater yourself so you understand the effort that those animals go through.
That's fantastic. What a great way to spend a summer. Think about it. As kids, working with your dad, catching, tagging, and watching fish. Man, oh, man. Yeah. Good for you, man. All right, so tell us what's going on out there, because a lot of us haven't been able to get out. You say you're looking at and watching it, bass spawning. How's the spawn this year? Has the weather affected them in one way, shape, or form or another?
Yeah, things ramped up pretty quickly. In fact, in some places, we've seen it ramp up so quickly that the actual spawn didn't start till surface water temps were about 20 degrees Celsius, which is, if you read all the books, at least it says around 14 or 15 is where bass start to spawn. Right. But I don't think the fish themselves were ready yet. So we also need things to be stable, and we still have been having, on occasion, at least a week or two ago, some cold evenings. And even though it might be 14 during the day Celsius, if it goes down to, say, 12 at night, they'll abandon their nest. So I think some of them have been holding off. But I can tell you there's far fewer hook wounds on the fish. When we're snorkeling, we can see whether a fish has been caught recently or not based on just bruising on the snout. And that's not surprising with fewer anglers on the water. In general, the fishing's been pretty good for bluegill, crappie, perch, and so on, pike as well, because there's not many people out there. I do a lot of work in the Rideau system. There aren't a ton of walleye. I think people are chasing walleye because they're yummy, and and I think right now people groceries are expensive, and if you can have a couple walleye feeds, that certainly helps keep money in the bank.
Oh, for sure. Great idea. Getting back to bass for just a moment, you said something there that's kind of interesting. You said that the male that's guarding the nest will move off it with a sudden temperature change. How drastic of a change do they require?
It only is a couple degrees Celsius or 4 or 5 degrees Fahrenheit. And it's quite simply below about 14 degrees Celsius, the eggs or larvae basically get killed. So it's pointless for the dad to stick around and guard a bunch of dead eggs. So, so in many ways, he doesn't have a choice. So they're really tuned into that temperature, but it's not the second surface water temperatures hit 14. It has to be 14 every day, 24/7 at least, or they will bail. So it's usually a couple degrees before that, above that, before they actually start to reproduce.
Nature is just such a wonderful thing when you really study it, and obviously especially to the depth that you do. You know, it's amazing how the DNA in these creatures just works like a time clock, right? In this particular case, works like a thermometer. So when it knows that those eggs are not viable anymore, it just leaves. No sense of hanging around, because it's not a temperature thing, because they're cold-blooded creatures. So it's not like they're feeling chilly. It's just that it knows, based on whatever the criteria is that's telling it the temperature has dropped, it just knows that those eggs are not viable. It's incredible.
Temperature means everything for these animals, and it's linked to their hormones. It's everything's connected. And I think, you know, one of the things that I've been able to do this spring is spend way more time outdoors than normal. I'm not in as many meetings and trying to spend good time with my kids and family. And we go on a lot of walks in nature, and just watching everything come alive this spring and that sequence of events. And it's so predictable. And this is something that our First Nations peoples in Canada have known for a long time. You know, you don't need to look at a calendar or a clock, you know what time of day it is, or you know what day of the year it is, based on what's happening in nature, whether it be, you know, what's in bloom, or, you know, which birds are calling or which frogs are calling, and same thing for our fish.
Quickly, because we're running out of time, but I have to ask you, do you believe that this pandemic might have some really positive effects on nature?
I think it's going to force us to rethink our relationship with nature, but I think we're seeing examples of both good and bad. So I do some work in India, and some colleagues over there have noted that a lot of people that are really food insecure are turning to destructive fishing practices to get food. So yes, right now the rivers seem to be cleaner and clearer, but at the same time, that pressure on them for food is increasing. So I don't think it's there are going to be some complex trade-offs, and I think we'll have to see. I think we're certainly going to see some reductions in global greenhouse gas emissions, and, you know, again, climate change. All these things are linked together. And so, and one of the other things I just want to touch on real quickly is, you know, I'm also an educator, and we're trying to figure out how to train the next generation to be fisheries biologists and managers. And in Ontario for this coming year, we're not going to be in the classroom. This is all going to be virtual. So, you know, trying to figure out how to teach students how to set a gill net or identify fish, and doing that online. Now, there's a lot we're trying to work through right now.
There's some great challenges ahead for all of us, for sure, and certainly your sector is not exempt from that. Stephen, I want to thank you for joining us this morning. Really appreciate it. And tell the kids, I think that you should be giving them a raise, by the way.
I'll try and do so, maybe a few more desserts, and hoping that our team will be able to get in the water soon. I know that all our grad students are itching to get out there.
Thank you, my friend. Take care. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Dr. Stephen Cook, a research professor of environmental science and biology, Cook Lab, Carleton University. Yeah, I think I need to have a lab or something named after me, Michael. You're right.
It's about time, I think.
See what you could do about that.
I'll get on that.
More journal after this, or should I go away?